Welcome back to the Roundtable. Based on a collaboration dating back nearly a decade, the authors, a behavioral analyst and a child psychiatrist, reveal their systematic approach for deciphering causes and patterns of difficult behaviors and how to match them with proven strategies for getting students back on track to learn. Their new book is The Behavior Code, a practical guide to understanding and teaching the most challenging students. Jessica Minahan is a board-certified behavior analyst and special educator who is currently employed in the Newton, Massachusetts public school system as a district-wide behavior analyst. Nancy Rappaport is an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and author of In Her Wake, A Child Psychiatrist Explores the Mystery of Her Mother's Suicide. It's a great pleasure to welcome you both to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
We're delighted to be here.
Thank you very much for coming on and talking about this. How did the two of you come together to look at this code?
Well, I've been working in the public school systems for the last 20 years, and there was a particular patient that I had seen consulting with the school from what a principal described, and this is Dr. Rappaport talking right now, as going from 0 to 100 in a split second. And I was very impressed with the concrete strategies that Jess had developed to be able to turn the behavior around with this student. And it felt to me so important to be able to think together about how we could take the knowledge that's available about understanding children's behavior and make it available for teachers, because so often when I've done intensive psychiatric assessments, these are kids who are, you know, can be very disruptive in class, and we needed to heighten the preventative kinds of things that can be done with children. And I was fortunate enough to team up with Jess and the Harvard Ed Press and come out with a book that we hope becomes not to overstate it, but a classroom Bible for teachers who want to find answers.
Jess, I think it's interesting in the subtitle of the book, of A Practical Guide to Understanding and Teaching the Most Challenging Students. Step one implied there is understanding.
Yes, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles for teachers. And because a lot of times this behavior looks purposeful, looks manipulative when a student is standing toe-to-toe with the teacher with their arms crossed saying, I'm not doing it. Teachers jump to conclusions about students. So I've heard, you know, they're manipulative or they're trying to disrupt the classroom, when in fact what we really want to teach is that it's a skill deficit. And students, Nancy and I believe, like Ross Green says in his book, The Explosive Child, a student would behave if they could. And so when a student is not behaving, it really is because they can't, and that they have some skill deficits, just like a student with a learning disability can't read and has skill deficits in reading. And that's the biggest lesson we want to focus on, is what can we be doing to teach kids these missing skills.
And Nancy, I guess just for a baseline knowledge of the difference between a deficit and a disability, of what we mean by challenging.
It's a good question. Some kids do have disabilities, such as autism or bipolar disorder, where it also may be that they have deficits, say, in being able to communicate what they need. But what we're asking is for, and again, we understand and we both support teachers in the rest and parents, but we want people to step back and become curious about the behavior. So one of the things that we talk about is looking at the antecedents, the behaviors, and the consequences. So that looking at the behavior, looking at what's going on before the behavior, and that can often give you a clue. Because many times, if you have an explosion with a child, what gets focused on, think about just today with the girl unfortunately getting handcuffed in Georgia, is that the focus is on the outburst, but not what happened before and what are the consequences, and how do sometimes adults in children's lives inadvertently reinforce that? So that can happen with a variety of kids, and that's what we try to talk about, that yes, you want to have a differential about some of these diagnoses, but then you also want to have practical strategies with how to intervene.
You talk about the behavioral problems of anxiety and oppositional behavior and withdrawn behavior and sexualized behavior. It doesn't have to be just one, does it? These can overlap.
Yes, absolutely, and they often do. The chapter we chose to write about first are students with anxiety, because I think that's the most counterintuitive type of behavior. So kids can look like they're oppositional. They can scream at the teacher or refuse to do things or shut down. But the only difference, it's not how the behavior looks, but what the underlying cause of the behavior is. So, and that really fuels how to best intervene. So if underlying the outburst is anxiety, the intervention is quite different than if it was purely oppositional. And so we sort of chose to start with that chapter to tease out and get teachers thinking in a way that's more like a detective and figuring out some of these clues so that their instincts are more guided towards a helpful intervention.
And Nancy, when we talk about anxiety with students, are we talking about typical anxiety where words like fear and fight and flight and that kind of thing come to play?
Yes, we can be talking about, you know, the fight or flight instinct, so that sometimes when kids become anxious, they can become combative, not all kids, and sometimes kids can have a range of diagnoses, you know, obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, things, you know, where they may be overreactive. And the important aspect is let's arm these kids with an ability to figure out, for instance, how to self-regulate, how to do things like an emotional thermometer, which many clinicians are familiar with, but it's a way of being able to self-reflect and then come up with strategies about when I'm getting started towards boiling over, what are some of the things I need to do?
When you look at I want to go back to some of the behaviors in a moment, but one of the things I found fascinating about the book is that while all of this is happening, the students, I mean, obviously the teachers are still trying to teach, and the class moves on. And these disruptions then put that student who's already having trouble one step behind, then two steps behind, then three steps behind. And as you write, they're missing this precious classroom time because they often are suspended or having detention or whatever, sent home. And so how do you come to some sort of, and Jess, I guess this is as an educator of a question for you, of how you balance all that to keep this in the mind that we have to deal with the challenges that this student has, but also to actually teach them.
Right. And that's a big part of my consultation to teachers, is a lot of the first questions that I get are, when am I going to be able to teach the student these skills that they need? How do I teach the rest of the kids? And what happens is that teachers can get into a sort of a little vicious cycle where the short-term solution would be to do a punishment procedure, like, you know, send them to the office or suspend or... And, you know, it's not that students aren't motivated and don't want to learn. They can't. So those kind of things don't help the student improve their behavior. And it's a short-term release for the classroom, so the disruption stops, but it doesn't teach the kids, and it's not the right intervention to reduce behavior. So the next day and the next week, this behavior will repeat. A lot of the question that I get a lot is, how am I going to fit this in? It seems like a lot of work on top of, you know, teachers have do heroic work. They're
right.
completely exhausted. They have thousands of responsibilities, 26 kids sometimes in their classroom. And what I've done, you know, to help teachers realize that it's more of a long-term goal than a short-term goal, because, of course, the short-term is kicking them into the hallway or the principal's office would stop the disruption in the short-term, but in the long-term doesn't help. So in the short-term, you know, I've gone into a classroom and taken data and said, you spent about 7 minutes out of that half-hour lesson redirecting the student who was being disruptive, saying his name. You said his name 45 times. If you took those 7 minutes and used them proactively, in next week and 3 weeks from now, the disruption will be reduced.
Proactively still directed at that particular student?
Yes, exactly.
So what does that say about the only 23 minutes of a 30-minute lesson that the other students aren't getting?
Well, so if 7 minutes, you know, is directed at the students, it wouldn't be during the lesson. What my biggest challenge is in a public school, it's a busy, unbelievable, you know, job, and is to make it doable and practical and only take a few seconds. So, for example, for a student who argues chronically,
Yeah. Instead
of kicking, you know, having them go sit in the hallway, I have teachers write down on a sticky note what the direction that's going to, you know, be unpopular, and walk away from them 6 feet away and be very busy, put their back to them. Kids often don't argue if there's no one standing in front of them looking at them, and it's a really common mistake teachers make, for an example, that they stand there, give the direction, and then maintain eye contact and almost elicit a response from the kid, and then they get in this arguing loop. So that, like, really simple strategy reduces a lot of disruption. So our book is
full of things like
that. So
we're not saying 7 minutes for the rest of the school year. We're saying just take the time to focus on how to learn some strategies. And teachers are remarkably, they want answers. So
sure.
We tried to make this very readily accessible. So the 7 minutes could be, it'll take more than 7 minutes, but take an hour and a half to read the chapter on oppositional behavior and come back in with some of the strategies that we're talking about.
And as we wrap up, because we're running out of time, but one of the points made in the book, Nancy, is that why this is so important and why we have this discussion is because these kids who behave inappropriately rarely master the skills they need to progress academically.
That's the American education tragedy right now. It's about the barrier to learning is many times behaviors that get in the way. And we are reaching out to ask us to embrace the ability, both for parents to be able to advocate for what should be put in place for their kids and for teachers to have an opportunity to do this.
The name of the book is The Behavior Code, A Practical Guide to Understanding and Teaching the Most Challenging Students. Jessica Minahan and Nancy Rappaport, I thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us this morning.
Our pleasure.
You the best of luck in your efforts.
Thank you for having us.
A great pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.